This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for the return of a legendary Broadway musical, a classic European stage drama with an American twist, or a weekend music festival, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The Hancock Whitney Broadway in New Orleans series continues its season with the legendary musical Miss Saigon, the new national tour of Cameron Mackintosh's revival of Boublil and Schoenberg's tragic love story is up and running this week at the Sanger Theater. Emily Bautista, the lead actress who plays Kim in Miss Saigon, joins us now by phone. Hello, Emily.
Hi, thank you for having me.
This musical is one with a long history on Broadway. What is its connection to Puccini's Madame Butterfly?
The story of Miss Saigon follows a very similar plot line as Puccini's Madame Butterfly. An American GI falls in love with an Asian, for lack of better words, prostitute, a woman who has to sell herself in order to survive her war-torn country. But what actually inspired our composers to write this musical was a picture from the Vietnam War of an Asian woman giving her child to an American GI so he could take her to the States for a better life. The big event that we centralize around is the American GIs evacuating Saigon. My character, Kim, a 17-year-old girl who was orphaned by this war, moves to Saigon and looks for work and just survival, but ends up meeting an American GI named Chris and falling in love and having a child. During the evacuation, they get separated, and we get to see the 3 years that follow and how she survives that with her child, how Chris tries to recoup with his life, as well as the other Vietnamese that were there during the time and the American GIs and how they struggled after they left and how the Vietnamese struggled to leave their country or progress with their life.
And you portray a very complex character at the center of this epic love story. Tell us more about your character and your challenges.
You know, it was hard for me to get a grasp on Kim. She's a very similar age to myself. However, she has experienced a lot of things that I have not ever had to experience. Being a mother at 17, it's not something that I had to go through. Being in a war-torn country, it's not something that I've ever seen firsthand. So trying to do a character like this honor and justice, because it is a real character, even though it's not directly based off of a real character, there are women in the world that deal with issues similar to this. So that was what was hard for me to grasp on. It was jumping into a completely different world than my world and trying to do it justice and trying to understand and empathize with a character of this magnitude.
Now, Puccini's Madame Butterfly was set in Japan. This work is set in the 1970s during the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think it continues to wow modern-day audiences?
I think the most beautiful part about our story that will never get old, that will never go out of style, is that love exists in its truest form. Our musical shows two people who don't speak the same language, who are in the middle of a war-torn country, chaos, bombs and guns flying, and they are able to fall in love with each other in such a true and pure form. I think it's a message that we need to hear often and that will never go out of style.
Let's talk about some of the issues being explored, beginning with the maternal bond and that bond being torn.
What's so powerful about Kim is that she becomes a mother at such a young age, and you get to see her not only take care of herself in such a dire situation, but also another human being, one that she proclaims that she would give her life for. It's such a pure form of motherly love. You know, when I was trying to get a grasp on that, I just thought about my mother. I thought about putting us in the middle of chaos and destruction.
And sacrifice looms large in this work.
Yes. The sacrifice that, you know, we talk about in the show, it's not something that is foreign to Kim or a character like Kim. She's someone who loves so deeply and puts others first. So that strength that she has in order to do that, in order to put everyone else's needs before her own, it's just, I think it's so powerful. And when I was reading the script, when I was trying to get a grasp on her and her character, all I could think of is how selfless this woman was. You know, she was fighting for herself And then she had a child, and everything reverted to her child, and she fell in love with Chris. She's just a very giving person, and not to say that she's a pushover by any means or will sacrifice her own needs, but when I think of her, I think it's just giving. I think it's just seeing the bigger picture, and it's something that is hard to do for many people.
What will we learn from your character, and how can we apply maybe one of those lessons to our everyday lives?
The biggest thing that I love about Kim is her inability to lose hope. Even in her most darkest hours, she still has this hope and she still believes in love. There's not once where she doesn't. And I think that's just something so beautiful. Sometimes it's easy to lose hope. It's easy to see only the negative, and she sees positivity and love and light in the most broken of places.
Wow. Actress Emily Bautista, thanks for talking with me.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Welcome to
Miss Saigon is playing at the Sanger Theater, with performances running now through January 26th. More info is online at BroadwayInNewOrleans.com. Southern Rep Theater's production of Entozake Shange's Mother Courage and Her Children opens this week. The powerful adaptation of Bertolt Brecht's epic tale transposes the action from Europe during the 30 Years' War to the American Southwest after the Civil War. WWNO's Carl Lengel sat down with director Shivis Michael and actor Lawrence Weber to talk about the production.
They are not the same play. They're really not the same play. You know, in order to direct this play, I read Brecht's Mother Courage twice just to get a full understanding of what he was writing. Shange followed his plot points, but completely recast the play in the American Southwest right after the Civil War, and recast the title character, Mother Courage, who she also calls Nana Fierce, as a formerly enslaved woman and her children basically fleeing the post-Civil War South and going into the West, where they thought things were probably a little more wildy and might be able to be a little bit more free.
So she took kind of the concept.
She took the concept. Yeah, she took all of the plot points. Right. Same characters. Many of them have different names. Mm-hmm. Same stock characters. There's the prostitute and Mother Courage's three children and the chaplain and the cook. But she's completely recast them and put them in a completely different scenario, one that is uniquely American. I really think of this story as a very, very American story. Our play takes place during what America calls the Indian Wars, right, which happened right after the Civil War. Many of the Native folks that I have called to talk to get advice on this actually call it the genocide. And so the complication of this play is that there is a genocide of Native American people by the United States Army happening in the background of this, right? And this is the same U.S. Army that just freed the slaves 3 years prior to the start of this play.
Right.
And so Brecht does not shy away from deep complications. The play is quite complicated in its politic, in how people are surviving, how people talk to, with, and about one another. There's a lot of fun, but it's about a very complicated time in history. And I think Shange has written something that feels very epic and almost like a myth, right? But you know that it's not. As you watch it, it feels so very, very real. It's so real in time, place, and humanity. But it takes on a very epic, almost Grecian feel in how she is telling the story.
She needs the war to survive.
She needs the war to survive. She's traveling around this war and selling wares to the soldiers who are involved in the war. And it's the way that she and her family make a living. And she seems to be very anti-peace, because in peaceful times, she doesn't have soldiers to sell things to.
Right.
Yeah, right. Which makes her a little complicated.
1980 was the original production of the Shange version of this. This is the first one since then?
First professional production of this play since then. Yeah, I believe another college, like a college, did a production of it sometime in the 1990s. But since the original production, which was done off-Broadway, won an Obie Award, and then it was put into an archive.
This is a musical.
The weird thing, you know, is that Brecht created his own style of theater, and I think his theater is a precursor to the American musical. Mm-hmm. In a way, I think there's like opera, and then the thing that Brecht started to do, which was these plays with lots of music that moved into the more traditional musical, the American musical. I don't think anyone would call this play a musical, but I think the secret of this play is that it's a musical.
Right.
There's a song in almost every scene.
Lawrence, what do you do in the, what's the role you're doing?
I actually play the chaplain. The chaplain is a really complicated character. I found a ways to connect to that because he's one from New Orleans, which I am, and of Creole background, which I am also. He's a complicated one. I'll say that. I think what's interesting about it is also, which also makes me a tad nervous. Last person who played it was Morgan Freeman.
Well, there's some shoes to fill.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, okay, so.
I think you have a selection that you do a cappella. Is that possible? You could share some of that?
Absolutely. Why hast thou forsaken me, Jesus Christ? Vinegar to soothe me, oh, Jesus Christ. The Holy Ghost came to his aid. Sinners off to the forest made.
Shivas, now how did you come to directing?
A May Hayes over at Southern Rep randomly approached me to ask me if I wanted to direct the show. I'd never directed a show before, and this is my first time. This is my debut as a director. And I mulled it over in my head, and I said, you know, that's interesting that she would ask me to do that. Yes, I'm learning to say yes and hear no in this part of my life. So I said yes. And and here we are. It's been a roller coaster. It's a lot of responsibilities. I'm so used to, you know, focusing on one set of lines, you know, in each scene. And now it's an entire concept, an entire cast of folks. And so it's been definitely a very steep learning curve, but one that's been extraordinarily satisfying.
How is the Southern Rep functioning as a space for you, from a director's perspective?
Yeah. I think it's, this is my first experience with all of this. And so it's, I don't have very many comparisons, but the space has been wonderfully welcoming to us. It's a very high concept play that I came up with, you know, and not only did I pick a already difficult piece of theater to direct, right, in an adaptation, right, by another really big American playwright, but then I decided to go very, very high concept with the set. It's a completely white set almost in a museum-like space, white floors, white walls, white objects. And, you know, I did that because I really wanted the people's bodies and their stories and who they were to stand out in relief from the walls. I didn't want to have to think about, you know, the tumbleweeds or the old mission house. I really wanted this to be a story about the people. Right. And so a white set is not easy to light. It's not easy to construct. Not easy to keep clean. And when I brought this concept to them, they all said yes. They just immediately said yes. And it's the only thing that you can ask for, I think, as a director, is for people to say, I see and hear your vision, and I would like to do the best I can in order to make that thing happen. And that's what they've done.
Thank you, Shivas. Thank you, Lawrence, for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah.
Carl Lengel talking with director Shivas Michael and actor Lawrence Weber. Performances of Southern Rep Theater's production of Entozake Shange's Mother Courage and Her Children are running now through February 3rd. More info is online at southernrep.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The 5th Annual Jazz in January kicks off this weekend on the North Shore. The 3-day music festival at Christ Episcopal Church in Covington features nightly concerts by an eclectic mix of national and regional artists and jazz masses honoring the legacy of a musical legend. The festival is the brainchild of Christ Church Rector, Reverend Bill Miller. He joins us now by phone. Hello, Father Bill.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good today. This year's festival marks a milestone as it celebrates 5 years. What are your thoughts as you reach this anniversary?
Well, it's always exciting to reach a 5th anniversary. This is actually the 26th year that I've been involved with creating sacred jazz festivals really around the world, from Hawaii to Texas and now in Covington. And I have to tell you, it's a real treat to be able to do this in Covington, being so close to New Orleans, and offering that as an added incentive for some of our musicians to come and visit us. It's been very well received, just a great opportunity to share music that might not ordinarily be heard in this area, and also to celebrate great musicians and true legends in the sacred context. So that's always a lot of fun to finish off the weekend with our jazz masses on Sunday.
What is it about music, particularly jazz, that makes it complementary to a church service?
You know, I think in a lot of ways, all music is sacred and spiritual because it really does take us to a level of transcendence and I think puts us in touch with the deepest parts of what it means to be a human being. I think it was St. Augustine who once said, "The one who sings prays twice." And I think what he was getting at there is that music really does expand our words, our longings to connect with our Creator. And whether music is labeled sacred or not, I'm not sure that really is a distinguishing factor because, in a sense, all of it is sacred. Jazz, while it may not normally be thought of as sacred music, there certainly are, you know, very explicit cases of that being the case, such as Duke Ellington's 3 sacred concerts, Coltrane's A Love Supreme, the work of Mary Lou Williams, for example, and all of these are artists that we've honored in years past. Mahalia Jackson is an obvious choice, and Aretha, you know, growing up in the church, her music capturing the core of spirituality, which is to love and respect one another.
Now, this festival is called Jazz in January, but you have quite a mix of musical genres and top performers represented. What can we look forward to?
Yeah, we really do have an interesting mix of performers. On Friday, the 24th, we have Shannon McNally, and she is just an extraordinary singer and guitar player. She's lived all over the world, been nominated for a Grammy. She was one of Dr. John's favorite musicians and collaborated with Dr. John and actually did one of the eulogies at his memorial service. And then there's a group of all-star musicians from right here in New Orleans called the New Orleans Catahoulas, and they're preserving the rhythm and blues tradition of New Orleans. People will recognize a lot of the songs that they'll be playing. Hey, put on that red dress, babe, 'cause we are going out tonight. Then on Saturday night, we kind of shift gears a little bit. Kalu James, who is from Nigeria, now living in Austin, Texas, and has put together a great band called Kalu and the Electric Joint. And then a husband and wife team, they're called the Birds of Chicago. I would classify their music as soulful Americana. They're getting rave reviews and have not performed in New Orleans recently, so we're really looking forward to having them. The concerts on Friday and Saturday night really do offer something for everybody.
Now, I hear that the gospel legacy of the great Aretha Franklin will be the focus at the Sunday Masses.
Yes, The tribute masses, which are titled R-E-S-P-E-C-T for sacred and secular reasons, we're going to be featuring two outstanding vocalists from New Orleans, Tanya Boyd Cannon and Erica Falls, as well as our own Ashley Limler, a band led by Matt Limler, and female choir backing them. So should be an extraordinary morning.
Can you tell us a little about the sermon you will give at the Jazz Masses honoring Aretha Franklin?
Yeah, so what we usually do is listen to a lot of music and figure out which songs fit liturgically. You know, songs like Angel, Spirit in the Dark, those will be heard as preludes. The processional hymn is I Knew You Were Waiting for Me. Sequence hymn is I Say a Little Prayer. And then the sermon selections, which I will share with my associate priest, Morgan McIntyre, are You're All I Need to Get By and R-E-S-P-E-C-T. So basically, we'll be doing a spiritual reflection on Aretha's life and on that particular piece of music and how it ties in to our own spiritual journeys and our own callings. And then it just gets better after that, all the way to the end.
What is your ultimate hope as you bring people together in song and prayer?
You know, we really want people to come away inspired, motivated, and connected. Aretha was able, I think, to cut through to the essence of what it means to be a human being, that longing for love and connection and companionship and respecting our fellow human being, respecting the dignity of all people, which is such a core value for us. I'd also hope that people would leave those services recommitted to sharing that message of love with the world.
Festival founder and Christ Church rector, Reverend Bill Miller, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Well, thank you so much, Diane. I sure enjoyed it.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, take F-T-C-T.
The 5th Annual Jazz in January Music Festival runs Friday, January 24th through Sunday, January 26th at Christ Episcopal Church in Covington. More info is online at ChristChurchCovington.com. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation. Additional support comes from Le Petit Theatre. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.